Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is TortureCast.
Welcome, everybody, to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. This is a bonus-ode, as you can tell by the loud noises in the background. My name is Willie Dills, episode 68.1. The voice you just heard is one Chad King. We just watched a drubbing of the Brewers from the press box. Finally, a game that was fun to watch from the press box for us. Chad, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
You know how much better Jameson tastes after a victory like that? Salute. Man.
You notice that we're not joined by anybody else tonight, which is kind of rare for the bonus hosts.
Yeah. I don't think we've done this for a couple of years when maybe we were recording at your work or something.
Yeah, the first one we did was at my office.
Yeah.
And it was very quiet and, since we've been doing the Zeeks, we've always had either Jen or Allie or Veronica or, Eric and Nathanson or some other party was always, here along for the ride. Tonight it's just the two of us, but I don't think we're going to run out of shit to talk about because tonight's game was epic, to say the least. The Giants won by a score of 13-2 tonight over the Milwaukee Brewers, a team that actually kind of tortured us earlier on in the year. I mean, we had a really bad series against them.
In Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Right?
And I'm not actually sure what the record is on the year for the Giants against the Brewers, but I know it wasn't very good.
No.
The Brewers are a good team. They're in first place in the
division. I think they lost 3 out of 4 in Milwaukee.
Yeah. So the Brewers were one of the hottest teams in baseball for a while.
They're still in first place.
Still in first place. I think they've been in first place since July. Like, they've just been...
Yeah.
They're just, like, perennially in first place at this point.
Yeah, Cardinals are on their heels, though. I think they're a game and a half coming into tonight. I don't even know if Cardinals won or not tonight. If they did, they're a half game back.
So, 13-2. Vogelsong had an amazing outing. Peralta. Wiley Peralta, who had 15, he was 15-8. Not like he had a scorching ERA. I mean, he was in like the threes or whatever.
Low threes.
He was
low threes.
So,
better than anyone on the Giants staff, right?
He pitches in a bandbox, so that's a good ERA for a guy who pitches for an offensive-minded team in an offensive park. So, we expected a battle tonight. We did not expect the Giants to come out and just torch them for 13 runs.
No, when you drop a three spot in the first inning?
Three spot in the first inning, all with singles.
And here's, we've complained about it all year. I think earlier in the year, writers for the Colorado Rockies, their fans, I guess, they were saying that, we have the magic wand going.
Oh, yeah, the Giants have the magic wand.
Extremely high BABIP. Basically a lot of fucking good luck. And then it just all shriveled up in June and July. Tonight was definitely recapturing some of that April and May glory because that first inning, I mean, they smoked the ball pretty hard, don't get me wrong.
But yeah.
All four singles were on the ground. They just found holes.
Okay, so as far as extra base hits, you had two doubles. You also had two triples tonight, and you had one home run.
Yeah.
And that's the extent. Out of 19 hits, 5 of them were for extra bases.
Yeah, they singled them to death.
So 14 singles is really what did them in. And, I mean, so the two-run home run by Blanco. You had the triple from Posey, which was pretty exciting.
A little rare. A triple from Pagan.
And you had Pagan go a single, double, and a triple tonight.
Yeah.
Got pulled before. Well, he got one more at-bat, but he didn't get,
the home run.
But Posey went 5 for 5. So let's talk about some of the big highlights tonight. Posey 5 for 5, which is an epic night for Posey. He's done it once before against the Mets last year.
Yeah.
So it's not his first 5-for-5, but 5-for-5 is a big, that's just a big night. That's a historic type of night, yeah.
I mean, it's would have been exceedingly rare if he stayed in the game to try and go 6-for-6, but well, no one faulted point, yeah. Bochy for pulling
if the game was 5-to-5, he's still in the game.
He's in. Or if he could have gone for the cycle, if he doubled that last at-bat.
Sure. Yeah. But at this point, there was no reason to keep him in. And actually, I think, Ryan was talking to us. He's like, why haven't they put in everybody? Why isn't everybody out? So, well, the Giants don't really have a deep bench right now.
Too many pitchers on the team.
You look at the bench right now, and it's like Arias and like... You know, there's just not a lot of options. You know, Ishikawa, Duffy. There's not a lot of guys to pull from.
No, we figured, Duffy was the only guy that didn't make it into the game?
Yeah, Duffy was the only guy that did not come in the game. But, I mean, that makes sense because he can play second short. He can play kind of whatever you need him to do at that point. So you keep him in case somebody gets hurt weirdly. But, yeah, it was a really fun night. You also had Panic, 4 hits tonight.
4-for-6, right?
Yeah. So Panic is now batting.
What's he up to?
He is now batting like 312.
312. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and Posey's up to 297. You got Sandoval at 285. You got Pence at 290. You got Pagan over 300. You think about it, we got a lot of guys right around the 300 mark, and that's pretty crazy for this team.
Well, and Posey's been hot. Everyone's been talking about we need this guy to carry the team for the last 28 whatever games.
Yeah.
And there was... You called it perfectly. You said like 8 games ago he was hitting 278.
Yeah.
And then it was Bags who tweeted out, 8 games ago he was hitting 278.
And now he's hitting 297. Yeah.
Which raising your average 20 points in August?
Yeah.
In 8 games?
Yeah.
What the hell, man?
That means you're like scorching hot.
That's insane. He must be hitting like freaking 750 over his last 8 games.
I got to look at what the actual stats are of those games.
Yeah, you go 5-for-5. And, you know, last night he had 3 hits. And yeah. So it goes on and on.
So Pagan 3 hits. Panic 4 hits. Posey 5 hits. Pence 3 hits.
Oh, yeah. Pence had 3 hits.
Blanco only 1, but he also got a couple of walks and... Hit the home run.
And a stolen base.
Vogelsong had one of the most entertaining at-bats of the night.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Fouled off 3 after getting to a full count.
And then just dumped
a single into right field. I mean...
Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, just a fun, fun game all the way around. The only guy that was really struggling was... Poor Crawford.
Yeah, Crawford's really... He's hitting hard right now, both defensively and offensively. And,
yeah.
I mean, they need him. You know, you see a lot of people...
No, there's not another option, so he's going out there.
Timing for who?
Yeah.
Who are you going to replace him? Oh, let's put Duffy there? Let's put Arias there?
We're running him out every day all the way until the end.
And come on.
That's just how it's going to be.
It's not going to be different.
But also, if you look at the league or the team leaders, did a lot of stats... You also have to notice that, you know, he's got 50 RBIs on the season. He's not that far behind some of our big RBI guys because, you know, he's played a lot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, April and May were insane for him. He was actually leading the team in RBI through somewhere in May, and he had, 6 bombs in April and May?
Yeah. So he's just scuffled
really
recently.
Cooled off.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. But if the rest of the team can rally around him, and they can do all the hitting. It doesn't matter. Just continue to play defense and don't have these double and 3 error nights anymore because that's really what kills us. So really, really fun game. Really a big game for the Giants to keep the momentum going after taking 3 out of 4 from the Rockies, which was not, you know, you can look at that and you can say, okay, the Rockies series, maybe that turned something around for the Giants. It's really just beating up on a bad team that's even worse now than they should be.
Yeah.
So you can't put a lot of stock into that series. However, it was for the first time the Giants doing what they were supposed to do.
And, you know, coming back from 2 tough losses, one in Washington, they're leading 6-2, one against Colorado where Crawford's 2 errors really was the difference in the game.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of teams
wasted
just
another good pitching performance.
Once they pack it in, but, you know, they're going to kind of play flat the next day. And, you know, kudos to the Giants. They know they're in it still. They pulled out those 3 in a row. They come in tonight. It looks like a tough matchup.
Yeah.
And they absolutely destroy the Brewers.
Yeah.
They got a four-game win streak now.
Yeah. So that's a big deal. At this point in the season, win streaks are massive. And if we can be the team that gets the win streak, and let's see what's going on with the Dodger game, by the way, actually.
Yeah, I just want to check
out what's going on there. So right now, currently, 4 games back of the Dodgers, depending on what happens tonight, could be 3.5, could be 4.5, which is a big difference. I mean, 4.5 at this point feels insurmountable. 3.5? Doesn't.
You know what's crazy? If they do get to 3.5, they're only going to be a half game difference from where the Oakland A's are right now behind the Angels.
Wow.
Isn't that a trip?
With the difference in records, that just doesn't make sense.
No, because the Giants are, what, 10 games behind the A's
yeah.
in record, but
oh, man.
They're playing in the hottest division in baseball.
So right now, the Padres are up in the bottom of the 12th with a man on first and nobody out.
All right.
The Padres team, I'm amazed they scored two runs. They scored those two runs in the four, like before the fourth inning, though. So
yeah, Ryan Gajorka.
It's been a long time since they've put anything on the board. But anyway, so yeah, so if the Padres can pull out a game from the Dodgers right now, we, you know, the division is still within, that's within reach. I mean,
yeah,
that's just continuing the win streak for a little while and then beating up on the Dodgers when we play them.
Yeah, we just recorded, what, on Monday, and we were talking about how they might need to shoot for 88 wins, right? That was kind of before. Be more comfortable at 90.
Sure.
But 88 is a decent shot at making the wild card. Well, we were saying they had to go, whatever, 20 and 10, or I think that's what it was, 20 and 10.
It was 22 and 10.
Yeah, because they had 68 wins at the time
yeah.
and our, when we recorded, because they had just lost to Colorado. And here we are, they've won four in a row, so that 22 and 10 has turned to 18. Actually, the 18 and 10 puts them at 90.
Yeah.
If they go 16 and 12, they're at 88. That sounded
so
a lot better.
That sounds very doable. Four games over
better.
500, so that's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, right now you got it as a, you know, it was doom and gloom 2 weeks ago.
That's
and
baseball.
One four-game win streak over one bad team getting the three games and then beating one good team by a huge margin tonight. And suddenly you feel pretty good about things.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, you thought even if the Giants did squeak in, the way things were going before, you thought, what are they going to be able to do in the playoffs? Like, what could they possibly... Who are they going to beat in the playoffs, even if they did squeak in? Well, I mean, hell, they just walloped the Brewers tonight. So clearly they can do it. They're capable. If they go in riding a hot streak, who knows? Get there and you see what happens.
And the Cardinals did lose tonight, so officially the Giants leap ahead of the Cardinals for the number one wild card spot.
That's right.
Which I didn't realize that. So.
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, hey, look, the Giants are barely over
500
at home, though.
Aren't they? Oh, they're up by half a game on
half game on St. Louis. St. Louis lost tonight. Yeah, and Atlanta's one game behind.
But you really, you have to look. So it's basically like a game and a half. You could consider it.
Well, yeah,
game and a half
lead. No matter one or two, it's one and a half over Atlanta, two over Pittsburgh right now. Miami's faded now to six.
Yeah, so it's really a four-team race at this point.
It's
two
a four-team race for two spots. So two out of those four teams are going to make it. And obviously St. Louis can switch with Milwaukee. That could happen too. But either way, those four teams. Hey, you know, we got to get
a
shot.
That's a fitty-fitty right there.
Fitty-fitty. Let's
roll
the coin.
So you got to like those chances. Again, though, we got to reiterate. We don't want the wild card. We want the division.
Oh, my God.
So.
It's a crapshoot. Jesus Christ. You know, they could have home field, throw Bumgarner in that one-game playoff against St. Louis or Atlanta or Pittsburgh.
Well, the thing is, you
and
know...
that's it.
You know that you want Bumgarner, and you know that you feel good putting him out there, right?
Absolutely.
So you feel good about your chances in one game. The problem is that then you go against their ace with your number two guy, and that's really where the disadvantage lies.
That is why you don't want the wild card,
okay, so
even if you win.
Let's real quick talk about something, because you know, and I kind of want to bring this around to talking about the wild card in its current state. We'll get around to that conversation in a second, but first let's just quickly make an announcement. Chad was at the ball game very early today and was able to finagle his way into a short interview with the one, the only, Will the Thrill.
Yeah.
So we're going to tease that now. That's going to come out as an episode of TortureCast very soon. So look forward to that, TortureCasters. But yeah, go ahead. Tell us how that all went down.
Yeah, with the 280 closure in the Bay Area, I assumed there was going to be heavy traffic. So I just came up extra early and... sure enough, there was no traffic. So they're not applauding us, by the way.
No, no, no. Who knows why they're applauding? It's a bar.
So I got in early. They had, I mean, this was an hour and a half before BP, and I went behind home plate, and I.
Well, there was BP going on.
There was a BP going on, and I had no idea this is what was happening tonight. But Manny Pacquiao and Chris Algieri, to promote their fight in November, They threw out the first pitch tonight. So they were in the cage taking some cuts, and they had a contest who could see it, who could hit it the farthest. So they allowed everybody to come right around the cage. So I was like 5 feet from Manny Pacquiao, who stands up to about my left nipple.
He's a little man.
Yeah, he's a little
small,
man.
Small guy.
And not a good hitter. doesn't matter. He's a millionaire because of his other skills. But standing right to my right.
Well, remember the commercial? He's like the Bo Jackson. Remember it was like,
Manny
Pacquiao can, you know, he can paint or whatever.
I think they were making fun of his lack of skills in any other profession or hobby or skill.
Yeah.
He's a one-trick pony.
Okay.
But standing right to my right was Will Clark. And so, you know, he was my favorite Giant growing up, my favorite Giant of all time. And I knew I had to ask him for an interview, and it was just a matter of picking my spot. So he was doing stuff with the boxers and other players. All the players were taking selfies with Manny Pacquiao. He's a hero of theirs. And then he was grabbed by Marty Lurie to finish an interview. So I just kind of hung out and listened to the interview, but also listened to their post-interview conversation. A lot of F-bombs from Will. It was actually pretty interesting.
Well,
just to hear
he's dropped F-bombs on national television.
On national television in the playoffs. Yeah.
So, precursor to
Timmy. It was not to not be expected, but sure. It was just funny how the interview turns off and then the real Will comes out.
Yeah.
But after he was done chatting with Marty, I just grabbed him and asked him if he had 5 minutes, and he's like, yeah, sure, no problem. So we had a six-minute interview. It was fantastic. I actually didn't, you know, pee my pants, and it was pretty good. I got his thoughts on the 87 and 89 playoffs, compared that to the 2010 and 2012 teams.
Yeah.
Just because of the two-year separation, how much experience 87 gave him and the team for 89. Just thoughts
to get past the Cardinals in that year.
Yeah, Candy Maldonado. Yeah. I didn't mention anything like that, what are you going to do?
It's I think there's a lot of parallels you could draw between those two teams, because it was, in a lot of ways, it was the 87 team was a lot scrappier,
exactly.
And a lot less was expected of them, and then 89 team was a lot more like more of a powerhouse type of team.
Yeah, 89 was clearly a better team than 87.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But so his thoughts on that, if the experience gave him, you know, more gumption in 89. But then I also asked him about the 93 season, in which they won 103 games.
And did not go to the playoffs
because they finished one game behind the Atlanta Braves, who won 104. And he's still kind of pissed about that year because he knew, and they were hot at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Atlanta was just a little bit hotter.
Well, they got Fred McGriff.
And Atlanta Fulton County Stadium burned down, and that apparently helped them.
Yeah.
I don't know, some old baseball, you know, legend story there. But, he talked about the wild card. I asked him if he likes the new format versus the old format. He actually does not like the new format with the two teams that get in, because a one-game crapshoot is just, you know, we talked specifically about the A's and the Angels. One of those teams most likely is going to go in as a wild card with something like 97 wins, probably better than any other team in baseball. And yet, they might not make it into the next round.
Sure.
So that's kind of unfortunate. Then I also quizzed him. I talked about Jorge Soler, who just came up with the Cubs, and he hit a home run in his first at-bat a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Of course, Will Clark hit a home run in his first at-bat in 86 in the Astrodome versus Nolan Ryan. So I asked him, how many major league players have hit a home run in their first at-bat?
Oh, wow.
And he was like, oh, shit, I don't know. So he said, I know I was like 50-something.
Yeah.
So he's like, I don't know, 75. I said, 117. So 117 players have done that. So he was impressed by that, but I'm a little depressed because, you know, he thought it was in the 70s. But I assured him there's been more no-hitters than 117. So you're okay.
Well, yeah.
You're okay.
It's still, you think about how many players have come through the majors and, you know, each one of them got one crack at hitting a home run in their first at bat. Only 117 did it.
Tens of thousands of players over
the
history of baseball.
That's pretty good. So, it's 117 like, home runs out of tens of thousands of at-bats.
And one of them was Dwayne Kuiper. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
By the way, today is the anniversary of Dwayne Kuiper's home run. If I ever get if I ever get a chance to talk to Kuiper, I'm definitely going to ask him if he thought that that home run was going to break the seal. If like, you know, it just, he was just, he just, All he needed to do was get one, and it was going to open the floodgates. Yeah, and then suddenly he was going to hit like 30 more.
No, he stated that he's glad he didn't hit more than one.
Yeah?
He's glad he didn't even hit two.
It makes him very special.
That's exactly right. Yeah. If he hit two, he's like, do you think people would have been talking about
my home run?
Nobody
gives a crap that you hit a second one.
No one would have cared.
The second...
The fact that he hit one.
That's kind of... That's weird to think about because that would have been basically the worst home run in the history of baseball if they hit the second one. Yeah. It's like...
You should ask if you tried to not hit a home run.
The first one was the greatest home run in the history of baseball.
Yeah.
The second would have been the worst. Thankfully, that never happened.
Yeah.
Okay, why I wanted to kind of bring that up, and also to tease the fact that very soon there will be an episode, a very special episode, not just a bonus-ode, but a bonus of a bonus-ode with a short interview with Will Clark. We'll put that out as a separate episode.
Yeah, no, I just have to say, today some really good things happened for TortureCast.
Yeah, we had a good day.
Personally,
good
some
day
other
all
things
around.
That we're going to reveal later.
Good day all around.
Yeah.
But I want to bring this up also to discuss this new wildcard format because I have a different view of it than Will Clark does. I like the fact that we're now having these two teams do the one playoff game. The reason being is that there was a few years there where it seemed like the wildcard team was actually winning the World Series at a higher clip than they should be. More often, they were winning the World Series over teams that had battled to win their division.
Yep.
And I don't find fault in having four teams. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, I mean, there was a time where one team from each got in. One team from each league got in, and then they played each other in the World Series.
That was it.
Then we switched to the divisional thing.
And that was all the way up until we looked it up tonight, 1969.
Yeah. So 69 is when they split into two divisions. Yeah. Then two teams played one league championship series, then went on to the World Series. And then what was it? It was in the 2000s that they switched to the wild card, right?
Yeah, no, it was 1990.
Was it in the late 90s?
Yeah, it's 99, I want to say.
So this is still a pretty recent phenomenon at all, is having a wild card. And, you know, obviously, like, other teams or other sports had this. Football, wow, they're getting drunker and drunker to our left.
Little quarters or something going on.
I think, yeah, some quarters. So wild card was something that kind of got adopted from other leagues. Football was doing the wild card thing before we were. Which makes more sense, too, because there's less games and it's, you know, it's... You're not sure if 16 games have really decided who the best teams are.
Right,
so.
If you have, you know, one significant injury or bad luck in one game, that's the difference of making the playoffs or not. So the wild card kind of absorbs.
But in baseball, 162 games is going to figure out.
Yeah,
most
you have a
cases.
Couple of bad games. If you lose out by a game, well, you know, you have 162.
But it figured out who the best teams were in general much better than, you know, and then you look at other sports, like the ridiculousness of the NBA playoffs, where basically half the league makes the playoffs.
And the NHL.
Just stupid. Yeah, the NHL,
both,
half the
both
league.
Sports, especially the Eastern Conference of the NBA and some of the NHL
so
teams.
You just got
they
lucky.
Can be under 500.
Yeah. You got
and
lucky
be
that you're
seed.
In the right conference. Yeah, it's stupid.
Like the Warriors going in as the 8 or 7 seed with an above 500 record, and there's number 6 seed in the Eastern Conference that it's under 500.
But I mean, those teams have no shot. There's really no need to be putting those teams in the playoffs.
No, they're put in number 8. They get blown out. Yeah, it happens.
They have
all the
no
time.
Chance.
No.
They should go down to 5 teams, like the baseball is doing, and just have 2 teams be considered wild cards. Like, they have these divisions within the conferences that mean absolutely nothing. There's no freaking point in having a Pacific division in the NBA because it means nothing. Like the Warriors were like 2nd in the Pacific. It's like, who gives a crap? Where are they in the conference? That's all that matters. So anyway, whatever. That's another topic for another podcast. We'll let the NBA podcast hash that one out. I think, though, that penalizing the wildcard teams is the correct way to go. But I don't think there's another good way to do it other than give them one more series to play. And I don't want them to play a 3-game series because that's... in effect too much of a penalty by asking them to play that much more baseball. So I think the 1-game playoff is actually perfect because what it essentially does is just takes your best pitcher away because you need to play your best pitcher
to
try to get to the next round. There's no, you can't hold back at that point and plan for getting to the next round. So you have to, you know, put your best pitcher out there, win that 1 game, and then deal with the fact that you're down your best pitcher to start this series. Makes it harder to get past the next series and makes winning the division more important. And it should be important. My feeling is I like it because if you're going to have a wild card, you better penalize being a wild card.
I have mixed feelings about it just because of the fact that I don't like that many teams making the playoffs.
Yeah, it's
not quite the NHL, the NBA, granted, but it's a lot of teams. I will agree with you, though. I like the fact that you penalize a wild card team.
Yeah.
We had the Giants and the Angels in the 0-2 World Series. They're both wild card teams.
Exactly, exactly.
You know, if they both had faced one-game playoffs, it wouldn't have been those two teams, most likely.
No. Likely it would have definitely been different teams. And you know, it's just...
But on the other hand, there will be years in the future, guaranteed, over the next 20, 30 years... Where the Giants benefit off of this.
Yeah.
They could benefit this year. This is what we're shooting for. Now, the irony is, if they do secure the number one wild card spot, we're going to lament the fact that there's a second wild card. Because in the old wild card system,
they would just go right in. Yeah, yeah.
They would just go right in.
However,
and then they have to play. So.
However,
you don't know what's going to happen.
I'm still going to be a proponent of if you're going to have wild cards at all, you should definitely have some sort of penalty going in. And I don't think that non-home field advantage is enough of a penalty. I think that has to be more significant than that. I think this is about right. Now, the number one wild card does get home field advantage for that one game, right? So there's still something to fight for even within that. I don't know. I just like a lot of stuff to fight for. To me, it makes the regular season mean a lot still. I hope we never see some 18 bullshit because... That would just be fucking awful.
Yeah. Well, Major League Baseball loves this, and it's good for TV. It's good for the fans, because way more teams are in it.
More teams are in it.
Up until the
last
few weeks.
Right now, rather than there being three or four or five teams in it, there's seven teams. I have no idea.
Padres just walked off.
Oh, the Padres won.
Padres just walked off. That's what they're cheering about.
Wow.
It's on TV. Padres won, so the Giants are now 3.5 back.
3.5 games back.
Yes, that's correct, right? 3.5?
Yeah.
Oh, the Dodgers are taking the Walk of Shame in the dugout.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Now beat LA Chance.
All right, let's get this in a little bit. All right, see? So, you know, I mean, this is
why we do the bonus zone sometimes. You never know what's going to happen.
But this is what... This is how I want it to be going into September.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers, buddy. This is how I want it to be going into September in San Francisco.
That was about quarters.
The Padres did not walk off again. Yeah. But this is how I want it to be coming into September in San Francisco. It's you know, last year... was real sad going into September and not...
There was nothing to look forward to.
And having no chance to even sniff anything. So, yeah.
Hey, 3.5 back with 28 to play.
Yeah.
And they have 6 left against the Dodgers. They absolutely can control their own destiny. If they take 4 out of 6 from L.A., they gain 2 games, which makes it 1.5. So, in theory, if the Giants can take 4 out of 6, they only have to gain 1.5
within the rest of the season outside of those 6 games.
Out of 22 games.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That is extremely doable.
It's extremely doable.
Yeah.
So.
And we were talking about going into this series, picking up ground on the Dodgers while we're playing the Brewers and they're playing the Padres is going to be.
It's a tough assignment,
right? You know?
And they can still lose a game if, you know, things go wonky. But
step one is gain the game first night. Now tomorrow we got a day game, and I think it's the series finale that Bumgarner pitches. So
yeah, he's pitching Sunday.
We can more likely than not throw that one in the win column because Bumgarner is our 15 game winner. Who just
and he's been hot.
The perfect game.
He's
and,
been hot.
You know, so it's really tomorrow's the big game. I think tomorrow's the big game of the series. I'm gonna call tomorrow like a semi rubber match. Because if we win tomorrow and we go into
good shot at
we go into the third game with Bumgarner on the mound, really good shot at a sweep.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic shot at a sweep. I have no idea, so we're back. Back from our break. No idea where we were, but we will just continue to talk about other shit. So another thing that happened while we were away, which was, what, like 5 days? It's good having these episodes, though, more frequently.
Well, especially coming down the stretch here.
Yeah. I got to throw a shout-out to Reddit peeps, because somebody posted on Reddit asking, you know, what Giants podcasts are out there? What do you guys listen to? And they said, I only listen to TortureCast and the KNBR podcasts. And I was like, "Whoa, this is cool."
One of those.
Apparently,
is cool.
apparently, if you're looking for a Giants podcast, this is it. This is the one you find. So that's a good place to have gotten to, you know.
Of course, there's not much else out there right now.
Yeah, unfortunately, Giants Pod has been quiet.
Isn't that weird though? Yeah. I mean, besides Giants Pod, which you know they're still alive. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I think
you know they got a guy in law school.
Yeah, busy as hell.
And then, I mean, those pizzas ain't going to deliver themselves, I mean, let me tell you. Shout out to Reddit for that, by the way.
Yeah,
anybody who listens to this show, please help us out. Share this show. Tell other people, because I think a lot of people do want to have more content outside of KNBR, and we're trying our best to provide that, but, you know.
Yeah, so our mission to you guys... Post us on Reddit, post us on Facebook, especially there's a lot of Giants fan pages on Facebook if you're a Facebook user. There's like Crook and Kipe, SF Clubhouse.
Yeah, link to us and say, hey, I found this thing. It's pretty cool.
And yeah, some of these groups have like 10,000 people.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
And thank you for those who've done that, by the way. It would help us a lot, and we are trying to bring you guys more content and more varied content coming up, and obviously, you know, this season's coming to a close, but we'd love to cover another playoff run, and and then of course next season, who knows, man? And you know, lots more content could be coming your way. Now that being said, what happened since our last show, which was Monday?
They lost.
Yzmiero Petit.
Yes, another perfect thing.
He has now set a major league record, and we brought it up briefly on that show that he was at
38.
And we brought it up on that show, but kind of in passing, because you still got to get, you know, you got to get 9 people out or whatever it is, 8 people out, right, to get to the magic 46.
Yep.
He did that. he we knew his next start was coming. He's going to start in place of Timmy, and he pulled off the exact amount of outs he needed to get the record, and then he let the pitcher hit a double.
Man, that's baseball, right?
It is baseball, yeah.
The trippiest thing, too, because he tied Mark Burley at 45.
Yeah.
Then he got 46, and that was fantastic and all.
And 46, too, by the way, was a strikeout where the ball went in the dirt. And
they had to throw it out at first.
You know, throw the guy out at first. So there was a little bit of tension in that one. And there was a couple of deep fly balls, too, in, like, I think the first inning.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, easy by any means, and obviously getting 46 outs in a row without giving up a single walk or a hit or even an error reaching, I mean, that's 46 batters retired in a row.
Yeah, you have to rely on your defense, too.
Yeah.
Like you said, I mean, it's not just the defense, but the catcher, Susak at the time, had to throw the guy out at first.
Yes.
Which, it's an easy play.
You have to get a strikeout, and you have to have your catcher dig it out of the dirt and throw him out.
But, 46, 47, 48, it's really not going to matter too much because it's going to be probably another 5 to 10 years until anyone approaches that number. But it was pretty damn funny that the pitcher came up after 46.
Yeah.
And everybody assumed, oh, well, he's getting 47.
He's going to go to 47, and then who knows? Like, what if he got to – what if he set the new Oral Hershiser standard of 59 consecutive scoreless innings?
Right.
Where Petit goes out and throws, 60 consecutive batters or something. It would be a number that maybe people would say, hey, this is never going to get broken.
And it wasn't even –
he could have got there.
And it wasn't an error, a walk, a hit by pitch.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even a flare.
No, it was a solid double.
It was a solid double by the pitcher. Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things.
Yeah, it's baseball.
At least that didn't happen 2 batters before, because everyone would have been talking about that.
Somebody on Reddit, while we're giving shout-outs to Reddit, posted the odds of getting 45 batters in a row out, which was the record. And he had calculated the odds of getting 45 batters out consecutively at about 1 in 6 billion. So if you take into account every plate appearance and the percentage of time a batter will reach base in any fashion.
Yep.
And then you say, now what's the, if you take that and then you do it 45 times,
yep,
what is the actual odds that you will actually, as a pitcher, get 45 batters of average, you know, strength, whatever. You can't, obviously, you could say this batter was better than this batter, whatever. It doesn't matter. You're talking an average hitter over 45 times.
Yeah, we're talking about plus or minus a billion or two. And it's 1 in 6 billion. Cares,
yeah,
right?
It's 4 billion
or 8 billion.
1 in 6 billion, roughly.
Yeah.
Now to do the 46th batter, 1 in 8 billion. So basically, it was impossible to get to 47, right?
And that's what's crazy about it, because
that's,
it's
what,
just
like 1 in 9 billion or 10 billion at that point.
It's like an exponential,
it's actually,
function.
Yeah, it continues,
right,
to go up because, yeah, each one makes it even harder.
Every batter at that point, yeah, increases it so much. I,
yeah,
mean, it's way. Talk about Vegas odds, man. If anyone had futures on that, they could retire right now and probably bankrupt the casino. So I'm sure that's never been a prop bet.
No, and it never will be. But
never will be.
You know, whether he did it as a starting pitcher, which I think is definitely a little harder. Burley, you know, did it as a starting pitcher with 2 starts in a row. And it actually was 3 starts, I think, because he had the perfect game in the middle.
He had the perfect game in the middle, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It was
but,
tail end of one, beginning of another. Look, if you line up 46 consecutive major league pitchers at the plate.
Yeah. And then you
the odds are 1 in 6 billion.
And then you come in once a day and try to get one of them out, and then go home and then come back the next day and get one more out. Odds are at some point one of them will get a knock, or take
or an
a
error or a walk,
or, yeah,
or hit by,
yeah,
pitch, anything. I,
yeah,
mean that's why it's so incredible.
Yeah.
I heard some people going, you know, it was against the Rockies and some of the Padres and what. No, he
whatever.
Faced the Dodgers.
Yeah.
He faced a lot of quality teams. The Nationals. He had five and a third innings against the Nationals.
That's right.
After
he had an amazing performance against the Nationals. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't take anything away from this accomplishment. It's a major league record, and right now you go into the major league record books and use Mero Petit. Your name is in there, buddy.
So 2 stories about that game. First of all, the MLB authenticators are at every game,
yeah,
and they're there to stamp anything that happens, and you know that's of historic value, and they're there to authenticate, put the hologram on it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So after the 45th...
Rub it on the nuts a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah, whatever,
you know,
they got to
do.
Do
a little mark.
I don't know what the process is.
Some magic voodoo. So after the 45th out, they showed the authenticator was trying to get the attention,
yeah,
of
he's
the
like,
pitcher.
I got to get the ball.
Go on, I got to get that. I got to get that. But it was kind of a half-hearted effort.
It was funny, yeah.
Because you can't interrupt. I mean, you don't want
to. They threw it back to him, and then he went to pitch, and then it was a foul ball.
Yeah, and then it was a foul ball. Because you don't want to interrupt the pitcher either. You know what,
yeah,
I'm saying? You don't want to go, oh, let's stop the game to remove,
yeah,
the ball.
Yeah.
In that case. I mean, if it's a historic home run,
well,
you can do that.
The only way it would have been.
You can't do that. You break up a pitcher's rhythm, and the authenticator could be the one
who screws
up the mojo.
The only way it would have been natural is if the umpire had gone forward and just said, hey, I need that ball. I'm going to throw you a new one.
Yeah.
Because that kind of stuff just happens, you know, whatever.
So, after the 46th out, what was really funny is that there was a ball hit, it went back to him. Basically, the same ball was used for the next, because there's two hits in a row.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was Blackman who got a single after that.
Yeah.
And it drove in a run. The pitcher made it, and they reviewed that play and everything like that. They still didn't pull the ball. So, the same ball was being used that got the 46th out. And it was a strikeout, I believe, that ended the inning.
Yeah.
And Susak came off out of the field, and he actually threw it in the stands.
Oh, my God.
And apparently half the Giants were like,
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
And so, actually, I don't know if they ever got that ball back.
Well, I'm sure they did, because now what they have to do is basically go to the fan, offer him, like, a pair of tickets,
totally,
or something,
right,
and whatever. But it's a process that's been done plenty of times, like, gotta get that ball.
So I don't know if it was in consolation to the fact that they didn't get the ball or in addition to it, but today they told Petit that his hat went to the Hall of Fame.
Oh, cool.
So he thought that was pretty cool.
Nice.
Because most likely, that's the only piece of Petit's clothing that's ever going to be displayed at the Hall of Fame, unless he actually pitches another perfect game
or completes the initial. But this is Petit now 2 years in a row where he's brushing, you know, brushes with history, and it's kind of amazing because this guy is it's not a name that we associated with historical performances.
No.
Nobody would have said, oh, you know who's going to probably throw a perfect game? Is that guy Petit. I think that's probably your biggest, you know, candidate to throw a perfect game. But that was, nobody was thinking that. Now, I actually had an interesting thought about this, which is that, you know, so Bumgarner is in the eighth inning and gives up a hit when he, you know, did he have one out or was it zero outs?
No outs.
So it was no outs, and he gives up a hit. He gives up a double to break up his perfect game bid. And he basically has no reaction. He kind of does the Bumgarner thing. Almost everybody, to a man, was saying, well, the really important thing, if you think about it, is that you just get the win. That's the important thing. But I started thinking about this. Is that really the important thing? Because in 5 years, are we going to talk about
that win,
the game that he won? Or would we be more likely to talk about that perfect game he threw? I understand the sentiment behind, okay, the win is the thing. That's really the important thing. But in the grand scheme of things,
yeah, that's
100 years from now.
But in the future.
100 years from now, we would not talk about it if it wasn't a perfect game. This one hitter, brilliant performance, will not be talked about necessarily, but a perfect game definitely would be. So it's just an interesting, like, idiosyncrasy that we kind of have to convince ourselves that it doesn't really matter as long as you get the W.
So you had Sanchez
and let's say the Giants miss the playoffs too, right? Completely.
Well, then it definitely doesn't matter.
You never give a
crap. If they make it by one
win.
Game, yeah. Then you're saying, okay, admit it. Sanchez had a no-hitter in 09. You had Kane with a perfect game in 12. You had Lincecum with a no-hitter in 13.
And 14.
And 14. You almost had a perfect game by Petit in 13. And you almost had a perfect game by Bum in 14.
They're getting
if
used
those
to this,
two
man.
Had actually completed those perfect games, could you imagine that? The Giants would have had three perfect games and two additional
and two
no-hitters. In, what, three seasons?
Yeah.
What the hell?
That's insane. That's,
what the hell, man?
I would love to see the numbers on if there's ever been another run by any team.
Well, there's only been, 27 or 28 perfect games, and it would have been at 29
is it
or
that
30.
High? Is it really that
yeah,
high?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's in the high 20s. No, it's in the high 20s, but if it's 25 or 30, if the Giants had somehow completed those two, they would have had three perfect games out of the total. They would have had 10% of all perfect games in the last two
within
years.
Within a couple
three
years.
Years.
Yeah, within a couple years
that's
of baseball.
That's crazy.
It's just, I can't even imagine. Like, obviously, we don't have the numbers on if another team has had a run like that, but I can't imagine it's ever happened before.
So
even to come this close, I can't imagine it's ever happened before.
I think we talked a little bit about this on Monday, and 46 is just an insane. I can't even comprehend getting 46 major league batters out in a row with nothing going wrong. What do you think? I mean, obviously, you got to consider stamina if you're going for a full, complete game, perfect game. You also got to consider the pressure of a perfect game, closing it out, as we've seen with him, with two strikes and two outs with Eric Chavez, and Pence almost getting to that ball. Do you think 46 consecutive outs is more impressive than a perfect game?
Yes, absolutely. It has to be. It just has to be, because it's 46 instead of 27.
Yeah.
It just is. You know? All those factors aside,
I think 27...
It's 19 more.
27 broken up is less impressive than 27 in a row. But, like you said, 46, that's another 19. That's almost two perfect games in a row.
Yeah.
That's got to be harder than a perfect game.
It is.
It's got to be.
It is.
No matter if you pitch one batter at a time. Over 46 appearances,
and obviously there's factors closing it out. You get the game on the line.
Yeah, you're 120 pitches, whatever.
Yeah. And I get that, but in the grand scheme of things, in the long run, 46 is one of the most impressive things from a pitcher that we'll probably ever see as Giants fans in our lifetime, is that he actually pulled that shit off. It just is so baseball that the next guy is the pitcher and gets the double, though. It's like you can't write this shit, you know? You can't, like, sit down and say, here's the story, you know? He's going to get 46 guys out in a row, and then he's going to give up a double to the pitcher. Because everyone would be like, that's stupid. Why would that happen? No, he'll get the pitcher out, and then the next guy will bunt his way on or something.
Yeah.
Now, I'm surprised that more guys didn't try to just bunt their way on. Just like... screw that up. You know?
Just screw it up, yeah.
But you think about, like, the greatest streaks in baseball history, and you've obviously got Joe DiMaggio, you get, you know, it's
that's
got
to be the greatest.
You got Oral Hershiser. Well, yeah, I mean, it is, because, 56. You know, that's an insane number of games to get a hit in a row. Getting a hit is really hard, and getting a hit in every, you know, in every game is really difficult. But then to do it in like a third of the games, basically, in a row.
Yeah, you're right. That's like
a third of the games of the season. And at the time, it was what, like 156 games or 154? Yeah. So that's literally more than a third of the season. There's a couple of other ones out there. Like, there's the most consecutive games with, like, a home run and stuff. And I think it's, like, seven.
I think it's six or seven. Yeah.
And, you know, there's some real random stuff out there. I think
a lot of guys have tied for four home runs in a game.
Yeah. But I honestly think,
seven
I think
hits
that's,
in a game.
I think that's one of the most impressive ones. But I do put Oral Hershiser up there, man.
59?
Yeah. 59 consecutive scoreless innings is crazy. It's crazy dominant. Like, any single inning can fall apart for a multitude of reasons that aren't your own, you know. And just 59 in a row scoreless innings is just, it's craziness.
Yeah.
It's craziness. Who was it that he beat out, by the way, for that?
That was in 1988.
It was another, yeah, that was 88.
Yeah.
He beat out a pretty big name. I think it was like Ron Guidry or something like that.
I can't remember. All
right. Well,
I remember the day he broke it. Yeah, even being a Giants fan and him being a Dodger, it was definitely something to be very impressed about.
Yeah.
That's, you know, think about complete games.
By the way, Hershiser, one of the only guys to
it's like six and a half complete games.
Yeah.
Of shutout.
Yeah. Hershiser, one of the only guys to go from the Dodgers to the Giants. Just doesn't happen. But anyway, so I just wanted to bring that up because I thought that was, you know, really incredible to watch. And I was at work that day, and I when he actually pulled it off, that was just a big time fist bump for that one. So good job, Petit. I'm glad that you finally got your moment in the sun there. And the other thing to note here is Lincecum out of the lineup or out of the rotation. Petit in. This is his first start. You know, he only pitched, what, six innings in the game because I think he only threw like 85 pitches or something.
Yeah, he was taken out probably a little earlier than he could have been, but
yeah.
It all worked out. That's fine. So today in the pregame Bochy conference, that was one
question. Oh, it was Don Drysdale.
Oh, Drysdale. There you go. Yeah, another Dodger, yeah. So in the pregame conference, Bochy was asked if Petit's going to take the next start in Colorado.
Obviously.
And, I mean, I think everybody knew the answer because how could it not be?
Yeah.
So, Bochy was like, well, yeah, he's starting. And it's like, how could he not after his last performance?
Yeah.
I think he threw Timmy a couple of bones. He was saying, but we've seen Timmy on the side, and he looks good. His mechanics look good. And yeah, whatever. I don't... You just say that anyway, right? You're not going
to
throw your
obviously,
your pitcher
we would love
to
have Timmy come back and be a factor. I was half expecting to see Timmy in tonight's game.
Well, I did, too. In fact, we talked about that because Bogey went seven. They have an 11-run lead.
Yeah.
And
it's like, what better time to test Timmy out in the bullpen?
So
than
I was
tonight.
Saying, oh, he hasn't pitched in like 7 days. No, it's been longer than that because he had his blow-up start, then he went five games, then Petit started, and now it's been another three or four, right?
Yeah.
Or two or whatever. Anyway, I think it has been about eight or nine games. So he's... Is he just throwing on the side? Are they going to just work on his mechanics until...
Well, I've seen...
Why wouldn't
I've
he go
seen
in?
The video of him throwing with, you know, and he's got rags watching him and all that.
Yeah, I saw him throw today.
But yeah, I mean, I feel like tonight would have been the perfect opportunity to just chuck him out there and say...
Zero risk.
Hey, whatever you do, it's fine.
Zero
go
risk.
Go out there and just, like, let's just feel this out. Let's feel out the process of getting into the bullpen and then getting into the game and all that. You've only done it one time in the for a period of time during the playoffs, and then one time because it was the 16th inning or whatever and we needed a save from you. That's all he's done so far. So this would have been a great time to kind of test that out. And we didn't. We got Contos, which, you know, Conto's kind of need to give him some innings too. I get it.
Yeah, he's not, just called up. He hasn't
pitched
yet.
Yeah, he's not coming in any high pressure situations yet. So this is a good time for him to get some blow. But yeah, no, I would have liked to have seen it. I posted it in the Reddit, and a couple people were like upvoting it and saying, "Yeah, look, that sounds like a great idea. Let's do that." Obviously, as a Giants fan, you want to see Timmy succeed in this role if this is what it turns into down the stretch.
Yeah.
When we do get to the playoffs, if we do get to the playoffs, you don't even have to worry about Petit necessarily being your starter because you only need four. So you've already got four other guys that are fine at this point.
I think he's got about five more scheduled starts.
Yeah. So if he's going to make an impact in the regular season, it's going to be in, you know, the next few weeks as a reliever, right?
And yeah. So do you think that Bochy and the Giants management at this point are basically just going to have... It's going to be start by start. So if Petit does well in Colorado, he's going to pitch the next game. If he does well in that start, he's going to go in the next game. It's basically, I think he's going to pitch until he blows up. If he has a bad game... Then that's
one bad
give...
game, you just throw Lincecum back in there. I
honestly
think
that's going to happen. I think if Petit, and I'm not talking about three runs in six innings. That's not a bad start. That's still a quality start, right? But I'm talking about five runs in four innings. Then you might see Timmy back in.
I hope it doesn't happen. I hope Petit comes in and just gangbusters the rest of the way.
Well, if Petit does the rest of the way, that means he's doing well in all those starts.
Yeah.
So that's what we want.
That's what we want.
Who cares who's pitching?
If this is the end of Timmy as a starter, or at least Timmy as a starter for the Giants, I'm cool with it. It is what it is.
It is what it is. I mean, look, if he doesn't start the rest of the year, and the Giants make it or don't make it to the playoffs, even if Timmy pitches in the playoffs out of the bullpen, they're still starting 2015 with him as a starter. There's no question about that. But why wouldn't they? They're not going to take August and go, oh, well, 2015, you're a reliever. Yeah. I don't see that happening.
Unless,
even if Petit is like 5-0 or 6-0 in these
but
starts.
But unless there's some big moves that can be made in the offseason, some big names become available.
That's a good point.
And, you know, you feel like you've got a solid five and you can move him to the bullpen and he's okay with it.
Yeah.
To see Timmy be the closer of the setup guy if he's cool with it because... If you think about it, that's a big hole going into next year.
Yeah.
Is, you know, obviously Romo's had a little bit of a renaissance the last few weeks, and well, I guess you can call it like a month now, where he's actually pitched pretty well after losing his job. In the setup role, he's done pretty good. I actually don't know the particular numbers, but just from a feel standpoint, I can't remember a big blow up inning from him since losing his closing job.
He had a couple.
He had
of bumps
a couple when
road.
It was like we're throwing him in like the sixth inning of games that were already decided.
Yeah, and he gave up a home run or whatever. But no, since then he's actually been fine. He's lowered his ERA since we saw him blow up against Colorado. So he's been fine.
But I don't feel like he moves into the closer role again.
No.
I don't feel like he was that kind of pitcher anyway. And he had that one season where it was amazing. We won the World Series. On him being the closer, closers kind of have a short run regardless.
Almost everyone does.
But he could be a fantastic setup man. Arm out of the bullpen for another bunch of years.
Yeah, aside from your Riveras and Lee Smiths, and
it puts a lot more pressure on your arm in that closer role than any other spot in that bullpen.
It does
because sometimes there's series where you come in every game of the series, and that doesn't happen for other guys in the bullpen.
No,
it's the only guy that gets that. You know, so
it's a special spot. But I could see that if Romo doesn't come back, Casilla's still going to be on the team next year. He's still signed, and he's had a couple of bumps too. I mean, not blow-ups like Romo, but he blew his save, you know, the other night, and they still won. And
but let's be honest, that's a hole going into 2015.
Huge hole.
Are you going to reliably say Casilla is the guy? I mean, we know Casilla's put up great numbers for a bunch of years in a row now. I still don't feel like he's got really the mentality of a closer. I don't feel like he has the intimidation factor that a closer's supposed to have. I could see Timmy having that, though. I could see Timmy coming in the ninth inning and just striking out three guys in a row on a consistent basis because he only has to do that one inning. You know?
He has that the small sample size of the 2012 playoffs where he came in and just dominated out of the bullpen. But when he has started, when things go south, it often is the first inning.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in the past have talked about the fact that maybe he doesn't warm up enough or whatever. I don't know what the reason is, sure. But his first inning ERA is usually pretty high for as a starter.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting to figure out or find out if he does eventually become a closer sometime in his career, if that first inning is going to translate to the ninth, or because there's lack of adrenaline maybe for him in the first inning of a start.
Or you don't have to look forward to seven more innings.
Exactly, where he loads
up. The first inning was the problem because it was the first inning or because it was the first inning of a start and not just the first and only inning, you know?
I think Timmy is capable of throwing 94-95 if he only had one inning. I really do. I really think that.
I totally agree.
You know, he's got a plan.
But not only
for
that,
his,
but he's got one of the most devastating out pitches that anybody has. Even now, the big thing as a closer is going to be, can I locate a fastball when I'm throwing it as hard as I freaking can? And if you're throwing at 92 to 94, which generally he's like hovering around 91, 90 when he's a starter. But he can't locate that, so it's like.
So how's he gonna locate 94?
Yeah, exactly. So that's I think the big question mark. However, if he's not gonna be a starter, it's an interesting experiment and it's worth a shot. I think. However, again, depending on what happens in the off season, if we get the right guy for the right price and he makes sense, but. But when we picked up Peavy, we gave up the closer of the future in a way, right? So now we're kind of scrambling for that spot.
Because he is it right now.
All right, okay, real quick, I think this is probably the last thing we talk about on this show because this is what we I was thinking about this. What we do with these bonuses, we come in here with no notes, no nothing.
Nothing,
we always
man.
Still
it's
find
plenty
to talk about. Yeah.
We're just talking shop, man.
But. How do you feel about holding on to Peavy for another season?
I mean,
I like the guy. I really do like the guy.
I totally like the guy.
Yeah.
But you got Kane coming back, assumedly. You got Bumgarner. So Vogelsong, he was only signed to 1 year.
No, Vogelsong is a possible, but
he's not signed to next year. It's just a one-year contract.
Improbable because. Yes, we've seen him pitch well towards the end of the season, but this has been a struggle of a year for him in a lot of ways.
Yeah, he's still, 3.6, 3.7 ERA right now?
Yeah, he's serviceable as like a 4 or 5 guy, but if you can improve, then you improve.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
And I think Peavy's an improvement if you're talking about 4 or 5 guys. I would have Peavy over him right now.
And then you got, of course, Baum.
Peavy's like a few years younger, too, right? So...
Yeah, and then you got Tim Hudson, of course, is signed through next year. You got Lincecum, assumedly would come back as a starter. So Peavy, it's kind of Peavy Vogelsong. I think that's they're both not signed through next year. So
you basically make a call on one of those guys, and then you fill in the extra slot.
Vogelsong's probably cheaper.
Vogelsong is probably cheaper. Very, very good point.
I'm not saying the Giants should save money, but if they can sign some bat next year, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. They overbid for that Cuban guy, forget his name right now, that the Red Sox went out on. So, but, hey, look, they didn't sign him, so now I think it comes to Pablo. He could end the year at 300 or close to it.
Pablo's probably going to command quite a bit of money.
And for batting like freaking zero for the first round of the season, it's pretty incredible that he is where he is. And they got no one coming up. So if he's commanding 5 years, $100 million, if the Giants are going to overpay for him, you got to overpay for him now. You don't overpay for him. If you go into the offseason, he's gone. He's gone. So I think it's got to be kind of a similar thing to what they did to some of the guys last year. They signed him late in the year.
And if you don't grab Pablo next year, I don't know who you play at third base. there's nobody.
Joaquin Arias. There we go. Boom. Problem solved.
Everybody who talks about how we need to get rid of Pablo, I want you to look inside yourself, take a good hard look, and then send me a letter and tell me who the hell we're supposed to put there. And why that's a better choice. I just don't see it.
And then go jump in the dryer and have your spouse turn it on.
I just don't see it. I don't see another option that makes any sense. And the problem is, we will have to overpay him. Not because we're just assholes and we overpay people, but because we're not the Dodgers or the Yankees. It's because third base is a barren wasteland right now in the National League. And it just, the major leagues, who is out there? You know? There's just not a ton of awesome third basemen running around.
I think Chase Headley is probably the best third baseman kind of coming up on the free agent market. But he's with the Yankees right now, and he's doing okay.
Yeah, like,
so
David Wright isn't just going to fall in our laps.
No.
You know?
Nothing like that.
It's not going to happen. So, yeah, you kind of got to bite the bullet on this one. All right, so we're going to wrap this one up.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to say real quick before we wrap this up. So hopefully we're recording on Monday again, and we're going to try and stream it live again.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to have a live call-in show again. The number is 415-799-SFG1. And what? They're going to be in Colorado on Monday, Labor Day. In fact, they have
another chance to beat up on the Rockies.
They have essentially a doubleheader on Monday, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that's
so
right.
So the first game is a continuation from a rain-suspended game from May 22nd. And so
What was the score, by the way?
It was 2-2.
Okay. So basically a brand-new ball game.
Bottom of the sixth, two outs, runner on first of the Rockies. Troy Tulowitzki was up, third batting position. So obviously Troy's gone.
Yeah.
So whoever they put in is the number three batter. So assumedly they'll get out of the sixth inning. So you got a three-inning game.
Normally what they do with this is they do They give you, like, an extra guy. They give you, like, 26.
But the roster
is expanded
on September 1st.
Yeah. So there's plenty of guys. So that's not an issue.
No, so it's going to be a three-inning game. Obviously, you can go to extra innings. And then the full game, the first game of the series, essentially, starts 20 to 30 minutes afterwards.
Okay.
So when we come to you on Monday, we're going to know the result of that suspended game. And we're probably going to be near the end or at the end of the second game.
Yeah.
So
real quick before we go, who are you most excited to, who you're thinking we're going to see on September 1st? Because actually we're not going to have a show until then, so.
Yeah, well, you know, guys like Juan Perez.
I'd love to see Gary Brown up here, man.
Gary Brown,
I do want to see.
He's coming up.
Yeah, we know we're going to see him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's probably going to come, he's going to be like a, you know, a pinch hitter, defensive replacement, pinch runner.
Steal bases,
kind of guy. But I'm excited just to see this guy. And we've been hearing about him for quite a while now. And I'm like, he's going to be like a kind of an old rookie. You know, it's like, we've been hearing about this guy for a while.
He's
not
one of those guys
I think,
a lot of Giants fans expected to see a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And he's had some slumps.
Yeah.
He's still hanging around, though. He's having an okay year, so. Yeah, I think he's going to be called up along with the allotment of regular AAAers that have come up. I don't think we're going to see like a Kyle Crick or anyone like that
no.
at this point. He's a little too young.
I would have said that I was excited about Panic, but you know, he's here.
Yeah. And he's hitting, what, 312 or something?
Yeah.
Over 100 ABs now.
He's here, and
he's doing well.
He's a big leaguer, man. So that's if anything happens this season, or if nothing else happens this season,
silver lining.
At least this was like the rise of Joe Panic, right?
I just noticed the amount of Brewer fans here tonight.
There's a lot. Yeah.
Wow.
And I actually just ran into my friend Erin, and she's with the Brewer fan right now.
Oh.
Yeah. The blonde girl sitting right there. Yeah. That's Erin, and then her friend is a Brewer fan.
Coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Apparently they're everywhere. All right, well, that's going to do it for episode 68.1. Again, it's TortureCast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, follow us collectively at TortureCast. You can also follow each one of us individually. I am at Willie Dills. Chad is at ChadK21. And Ben is at Fried Duck. You can also check us out on TortureCast.com. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. You can like us on Facebook. You can do all those things. A lot of cool stuff coming up. You know, look forward to the Will Clark interview. And the next couple games we're going to go to, we're going to have a little more access than we've had in the past. So we're actually going to be able to bring you guys, hopefully, a lot more content in these bonusodes and above that. So really looking forward to that. Feel free to, you know, shoot us emails. It's mail@torchcast.com. All that stuff. Thank everybody for listening to episode 68.1. Giants are only 3.5 games back of the Dodgers, and we're a game and a half up in the wild card spot. So things are looking up. 4-game winning streak. All right, we'll see everybody next time for episode 69. My name is Willie Dills for Chad K21. Well, Chad King and Ben Lee. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.